Once again, the studio audience gets to know how the sausage is made.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 54, recorded live Wednesday, February 20th, 2013. I am Joel Duggan of StarCostOnline.com. To my right is Mr. Peyton Francis from CardboardTreehouse.com. Peyton, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Top notch, sir. Hello, world. How's everybody doing tonight?
Everybody is very busy on Twitter. We'll get to that in just a second. First, I'd like to introduce a guest to the show, Mr. Eric Mahler. Thanks for joining us, Eric.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
And I was about to just kind of give you like a big long intro and realize that I know very little about what it is that you do online besides our conversations on Twitter. So sure. Why don't you just fill everybody in? I know you're a podcaster, so what kind of show do you do and how do you go about doing it?
All right. Well, I'm kind of a relatively new podcaster. So right now I'm kind of building up to the show that's going to really properly start later on this in a couple months or so. And just quick rundown, it's mainly going to be about me being a stay-at-home dad. Oh. And it's going to be a daily little thing. It's going to be 5-minute little daily shows. And right now I'm just kind of doing, because, you know, baby's not here yet. So for the time being, I'm just putting in like little weekly things that are updates on how, you know, like how I'm doing and how the family's doing, dealing with things. And besides that, I'm also a photographer and an artist and a video game fan and movie lover and all that stuff.
Well, you are among friends here, sir.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Good, good. Well, that's awesome. Can we ask when the baby's due?
Yes. So the baby is due end of April. And I guess I didn't explain very well. Let me go back a little bit. So right now I'm working same place I've been working for about 6 years. My wife and I both work. And we already have a 6-year-old, and when the baby comes in a few months, what we've decided to do is to have me quit my job because I make less money than my wife does, and also because daycare, the costs would be insane. It's like for the two kids, especially when it's a baby, it's well over $1,000 a month for daycare. And
wow.
So we decided to just have me quit my job, which I did recently, and that was fun. And just be a stay-at-home dad. So the whole idea is, you know, this being a new experience and kind of not too usual thing. Most of the time the stay-at-home is the mom, and I'm a relatively young guy. I'm only 31. So it's going to be kind of day-to-day how I'm dealing with being a stay-at-home dad, figuring it out, the pitfalls and the good stuff too, and all of that.
Cool.
It's a good ride. I stayed home for the first year our son was born. My wife's self-employed, so she was ineligible for mat leave, so I got the full year off, which was great.
Nice.
So document it all you can. It's gonna be fun.
Oh, I intend to. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, but make sure you do the dishes whenever you get a chance, because they hate it when they come home and they're not done.
that's gonna be the other part of my job, is I'm going to be a keeper of the household.
Yes,
so
yeah.
All the crap we don't have time for these days, you know, because we're working all the time, is, you know, I'm also going to be dishes and laundry and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, well, this is something that I've actually been doing quite a bit of. There are no kids on the agenda here, but we do have a kind of a split where Jocelyn does shift work. So where she's out of the house 12 hours a day, on the day that she works, I do my best to, you know, clean up and do all that kind of stuff, because I do work full-time from home. So I have the ability to take that half an hour here or there, or how I've liked to do it lately is these little 5-minute breaks every half an hour. So, you know, you go fill the sink with soapy water, and then you have a timer on a favorite app, you know, on your phone that goes off every 25 minutes. You take a 5-minute break, do, you know, a half dozen dishes, and then you go back to work, and you get paid by the client to do the kind of things that you've been doing. You stay fresh, you don't get bored, and also at the end of, you know, an hour and a half, all the dishes are magically done, and you don't have to then like take 20 or 30 minutes at a time to do any one task. So it tends to get a lot done in the course of a day. And it really helps me because, I mean, I might have mentioned before in the show that I've got a sore back, so I can't sit for great lengths of time. I get pulled into what I'm doing and then I break the rules. I sit for too long and then I get a sore back. So having this kind of work, housework and studio work happening all at the same time keeps me up and moving. And I've noticed a huge difference over the last, I'm going to say 6 months that I've been doing this, that I don't get as sore at the end of a day doing that kind of stuff. So Eric, you mentioned that you are doing photography as well. Is that a hobby or is that a professional thing?
It's mainly a hobby now. My wife and I, we did it professionally for like a few years. And we kind of just did it professionally because people kept asking us to do their photos. And we're like, well, hell, we may as well get paid for it. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, it became too much of a real job after a few weddings and just so many. And we realized, we were talking about it and we were like, you know, remember we used to do this just for fun. And now it's like a job and let's just do it for fun again. So we kind of stopped taking commissions and we stopped. We're just pretty much doing it for ourselves now, whatever we want. And we'll still do things for our friends here and there, but less of a professional thing, more of a hobby. Enjoy it more
so,
that way.
Cool. So no plans to become kind of a freelancer from home to help subsidize some income?
No, I'm still trying to figure out how I might do that. I mean, thankfully I will be more, you know, the money's not going to be too tight after I quit here. But I have been thinking about trying to figure out what can I do to bring in just a little extra cash to mm-hmm. help out.
Do you mind if I ask what you do professionally?
Oh, it's pretty dull. I'm an assistant manager at a gas station, which sounds really exciting, but you know, it's a job, and it's not the worst job.
It's cool. I was just curious as to how much of that might be transferable to like a home-based income.
Sadly, there's not
much. Well, yeah, very little.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but, until the electric cars catch on, then you can, like, you know, put an electric charger in your front porch and have your own little gas stand.
Well, what I was thinking is trying to do, because I have, you know, a million hobbies, be it the photography or the art or the, you know, whatever, the podcasting now. And, you know, as I have more time to do those things, well, conceivably, we'll see. I'm hoping that maybe I'll be able to squeeze a few dollars out of that somehow. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, even if the podcast gets to the point where it's self-sustaining, where you can have, you know, your own web host and your own web presence and that kind of stuff is taken care of, then that alone can be, you know, a couple $100 a year that you don't have to worry about.
Right. Exactly. See, that would be nice. At least if that would be good enough.
Cool. Well, for anybody out there listening that happens to be new to the Citadel Cafe, this is where myself and a couple of friends come to sit down and talk about the geeky sci-fi fantasy stuff that we've been into lately. We're not myopic. We gravitate to other topics should the, need arise. But we cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. And with Eric with us this week, we'll have a new perspective on some things that he might have been watching and reading over the last little while. But before we get into all that, I want to touch base with my buddy Peyton here and find out what he's been up to over the last week. Anything interesting to share in the life of Mr. Francis?
Work, family, all that fun stuff. Yeah.
And, you sound riveted.
It's good stuff. Just, you know, the weeks are just going by in a blur. You know, the boys... He's over three there now, so he's expressing interest in other things. And
that's cool.
He's been fighting a lot of ear infections again over the last year, so we've been taking him to a chiropractor because I guess the muscles in your neck can get really tight when you're sick, and then if you you know, have a massage or whatever, it can loosen the muscles in the neck and promote drainage of the ears. So he does seem to get some relief from that. And then next door to the chiropractor office is a Taekwondo dojo, and he walked by the other night, and he saw it, and he was just face stuck right to the window. We were sort of toying with the idea of looking into it, but he seems to be really, really riveted and wants to give it a try. But my concern is weaponizing him, because he's about 45 pounds and what is he now, probably about 43 inches tall, so he's the size of like a five-year-old. Like, there are kids there who are five, fully engaged and kicking each other in the chest with all the pads on and stuff, and Ewan's only three, but about the same size. So I'm like, you put him in a group of his own size, he's a head taller, that could be a problem, right? So, but the discipline could be good for him. So we had a parent-teacher interviews thing tonight with the daycare we have him in, and it's all good. So, you know, He took a smack in the nose on Friday. He went to get a dinky that another kid was playing with, and the kid didn't want to share and cranked him right square in the face with a dinky right across the bridge of his nose.
Jeez.
Oh, anyway, so I picked him up and there was blood everywhere and a big welt on the side of his face. I'm like, oh, that's not cool. But I know the kid who did it, and the kid's a bit of a tyrant. So
yeah.
Well, his house is his house, not his parents' house. So.
Yeah. When I was in school, I had a couple of classmates, one of whom was a very good friend of mine that was into Taekwondo. Several other kids in school were in martial arts. And there was that divide. Like, you've got, like, for example, my buddy Steve, who was very high up, you know, ended up with his black belt by the time he was like, you know, his junior black belt by the time he was like 12 or 14 or something. And then he continued on in his teenage years to get his full on second degree black belt. And he was the discipline that you're talking about. Like, No one ever messed with him, and he never picked a fight. You know, I mean, it helped that he was a pretty well-rounded kid anyway, but, you know, like nothing like that ever happened. But on the other side of the tracks, there was these other guys in class with us that were always getting into fights because they wanted to show off that they could, you know, beat the tar to somebody, or they were just itching to use this stuff that they've been taught. And you'd see both sides of the coin. It's like, well, I understand that, you know, it's a sport and like some of the stuff is obviously combative, but, you know, once you get it out into the real world, I mean, it can be a real split. And I've talked to other friends about it, like with other like Kung Fu and karate and all this kind of stuff. And the one that seems to be more kid friendly is Taekwondo and karate and the other things that are like very sport related. Mm. You know, like there's a point system, and like it's not just beat the other guy up. It's not like MMA, you know, where people are just fighting. It's got a different sort of feel to it, because there's things that you can participate in. I'm sure most martial arts, but I know for sure in Taekwondo, that are solo. It's like a performance. It's like a choreographed system of moves that you have to do perfectly, and then you're scored on that. So it's not necessarily always, you know, fight the other guy. So,
yeah. Yeah, the discipline aspect I'm referring to is be more of like follow through on what you're starting and focus and concentration.
Oh, yes,
and all that stuff, right? Because I remember when I was a kid, I was in cadets. You know, any organization that keeps a kid out of trouble is wonderful. And you know, halfway through the year, you would get bored and you'd want to quit. And my mother always said, you sign up for the year, you're staying for the year. After that, do what you want, right? But it was all about like staying in it. So anyway.
Do you think that transferred into some kind of beneficial, anything beneficial later on in life, the kind of discipline you learned, or is it?
I think so. I still procrastinate a fair bit, right? But, you know, it gives you a chance to set some goals, as well as, you know, the rewards in following through with organizations like that. Like, I spent every summer away in cadet camp, right, which was great and all that fun stuff. And it looks good on a resume, you know.
And did that lead to any, like, part-time jobs as a teenager? You know, like
camp and stuff? Yeah, I worked every summer as a lifeguard every summer when I went to camp, I got paid and stuff. But I worked a couple summers as a lifeguard, and then after that, I got other jobs from that. And, you know, it's just
cool.
That led into my ski patrol position, became a snowboard instructor and all that stuff. And
right on.
And that's where you meet the ladies.
Yeah.
So it all worked out.
Nice. I can't remember the name of the organization that Steve works for, but he is involved with training security for airports in Ontario.
Okay.
Toronto Pearson, Ottawa, and I believe one other airport. And Steve, for the company that supplies the security for those particular airports, Steve is one of the guys that's involved in training at some level. And that had something to do with, you know, his kind of career path. I mean, he went to school after high school to do different things in office training and whatnot. But some of his, you know, martial arts and knowledge of that kind of stuff ended up being something that he used, you know, throughout his career anyway. Eric, what have you been up to this week? Anything in particular that's been kind of like the sunshine of this week?
It's just mainly just a lot of work, but we did finally just yesterday Game of Thrones season 2 came out on Blu-ray, so we finally got to get that, and I hadn't seen the second season yet. So we got a few episodes into that last night, and so that was quite enjoyable. And then earlier in the week we finished off House of Cards, which I really enjoyed.
Nice. I'm only 4 episodes in to House of Cards, and both Peyton and I have seen the full season 2 of Game of Thrones, but it's been a long time. Like, last time I saw it was when it was like happening last year, so I'm looking forward to grabbing the Blu-rays. Jocelyn and I are actually slowly kind of watching season one on Blu-ray.
Right. Do you still feel the same way about the Blu-ray? I know you had talked about a few podcasts back about the video quality and.
I'll get into that a little bit more in what we're watching. But
I'm jumping ahead.
No, it's fine. Because there's two different things. Because it's in some ways the crispness of the Game of Thrones stuff is good, and in other ways it does feel kind of very digital, very video. And there was something, which is weird because that's how I consumed it anyway. I mean, I've not been sheepy about the fact that I downloaded Game of Thrones because I don't have access to HBO. So I downloaded the 780p version, and maybe that's the difference between the 780p and the 1080p or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I put it up on my, hooked my laptop up to my big screen, and that's how I watch them. So it's weird how this shift to the Blu-ray is now, it feels hyper real in some situations, to the point where sometimes it looks like a prop, sometimes it doesn't. Sure. Game of Thrones is better at it than most. I'm still having problems with the Blu-ray player in general, in terms of, I guess smearing or screen artifacting. It's not blurring. It's not like when you throw a football across the screen and you get like trails. That's not what happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cause I saw a thing about how, that can happen when you're using 1080, was it 1080i and not 1080p?
Right.
1080i can be can cause that kind of tearing or that fading. I don't know what you call it.
Yeah. Well, the best way that I can explain it is if you are in kind of like a dark lit room and you're doing your acting, picture someone putting a plate of glass up against your cheek, so that when you're moving your head and you're acting, it's like your cheek where that's touching that glass is staying in the same spot and kind of smooshing around. And it's really off-putting. And it happens mostly in dark and dim-lit situations. So watching Batman and stuff like that is problematic. And it does not happen in larger, well-lit things like cityscapes or, any of the shots from Batman where, like, they open up things really wide.
Sounds like a really bizarre visual.
It is. I know that one of the factors that I have not been able to rule out yet is the firmware for both my television and my Blu-ray player, which has not been updated since I bought them, because I can't figure out how. It is not the easiest thing to sort out. I think it might be a problem with like the thumb drive that I have to use to do it or something like that. But at any rate, it's been an issue. So I hope to sort that out. Once I do, I'll decide, whether or not I'm going to have some problems. But I did not know about the 1080i versus 1080p thing, because I know that you can select like the best output for your device. And maybe what I should be doing is researching and figuring out which output I should put it on and just put it on that particular output. Because I mean, both the Blu-ray player and the TV are both Sony. The amp is Sony. So, I mean, everything talks to one another fairly well so far, but maybe there's a setting that I have to drill down into and maybe change. Because nothing that I've been able to do has been able to fix it.
Hmm.
And it's been a real problem. Like, the Blu-ray player came with what's called a CineMotion and Motion Enhancing. And they're both meant to compensate for content created on film, which is 24 frames a second. Of course, video being 30, there's a problem there. So they create an inverse 3:2 pull down that mimics the original film without making it look crappy. The problem I feel, or I thought, was that we are now past the point where a lot of the things that I'm buying were filmed. A lot of the movies I'm buying, like Star Trek and Batman and all that kind of stuff, they're all digital to begin with. So I tried going in and turning off the 3:2 pull down and all that kind of stuff, thinking, well, I don't want to do it. If the original content was not meant for film, then it shouldn't be doing it. And the Blu-ray player, the discs and the player are supposed to talk to one another, and it's supposed to know. The disc is supposed to tell the player, this is digital, don't mess with it. And I'm not sure that it's happening. I mean, when it says it's supposed to do something, I much prefer a button to turn on or off,
Right.
Having a switch.
Trust in the machines.
Yeah, so that's my dilemma. Yeah, I mean, that's how Skynet starts. I mean, you know how it is.
Right.
Yeah.
I've seen those movies.
Yeah, so that's my big dilemma, which I guess can lead right into what I've been watching, and that's Batman, The Dark Knight Rises. And I mean, all of the same issues that I've just explained happened during the movie, which was a real problem and a real piss off because it's such a good movie. Jocelyn and I had a kind of rough day. I sat down to watch The Dark Knight Rises, and we thought, well, it's midnight. We'll watch an hour and a half, and then we'll go to bed. Well, 3 a.m. rolled around, and it was the end of the movie because we just couldn't pull ourselves away. Now, we'd already seen it in theater. This would be our second viewing, I guess, but it was just so good, you know, forgetting about the technical issues we were having, but it was just so fun to see all that kind of stuff. The sound was really robust when he turns on the bat wing plane that he flies around in. Like, oh, such a good movie. I know, I'm pretty sure that you guys have both seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So have you guys watched the Blu-ray at all?
I have. I thought it looked really great on. I'm playing it with a PS3 and just and my I have a plasma TV, but it's not 1080p. It's just 1080i actually.
Huh.
But still, it looked fantastic to me. But I don't know. Maybe my eyes aren't quite as.
There's no artistic eye here. This one. I mean, Jocelyn was seeing the same thing. It boils down to just having a very soft focus, and both Jocelyn and I were having a hard time. It makes you feel like your eyes aren't working. Like there's some aspects where it's very obvious where something is smearing, and then there's another point where it's like it's not obvious at all, but you can tell something is not working, and your brain is just like, what's going on, you know?
Sounds so frustrating.
Yeah, but beyond that, I picked up a lot of things from the movie that I did not get when I saw it in theater. It was way easier to hear and understand Bane at home, in the home theater.
I had the same exact experience like two or three times. I said to my wife, oh, that's what he says.
Yeah, exactly. And some of it is wicked. Like, I really wish I had heard it in the theater. Like, he says stuff. And he says it like as he's kicking Batman, and it has this venomous just snap to it when he says it, and it's brutal.
Well, he's not a nice guy. So.
No, well, yeah, I get that. But some of the things that he says and some of the plot things that he outlines were things that I missed in the theater. So there's a lot of things where I'm just like, well, I kind of pieced it together when he said bomb or, you know, said something else. But you miss some of the inflection with, like, when he says a question and he raises his voice a little bit or different things like that. It was much easier to catch in the Blu-ray. And I mean, both Joss and I, of course, despite the tech issues, still kind of looked at each other at the end of the movie and were like, yep, that's still a good movie. So glad we have that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So, Peyton, what have you been watching? Anything special?
A little odds and ends here and there, but I managed to watch the... Rise of the Guardians the other day.
Oh, this is the one from just before Christmas.
Yeah, the DreamWorks one.
Yeah,
DreamWorks.
How was that?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it had real nice heart to it. The characters were, I thought, pretty well rounded, and you know, they all played their parts and stuff. And you know, there wasn't a whole lot of that typical old like Shrek DreamWorks, you know, pop culture reference. All that foolishness is all gone. It's just
that's good.
It's all very story driven. And yeah, it was a nice little story. I really enjoyed it. It sort of reminded me of that Nocturne, the traditional animated film that was done a few years back. Anyway, it's
I think I did watch some of that. It's like there's like a sleep and something.
Yeah,
it was like sleepy, like the Sandman stuff.
Yeah, same similar ideas in there. So, but it's the Rise of the Guardians. I really thought it was a good film. It's a shame that you know, with so many big budget 3D films in the market that or CG films in the market, that it all becomes white noise eventually, you know, they can't
really
capture
does.
The same audience that they did before, you know.
Yeah, and it's really hard to differentiate yourself when you've got a couple of flops yourself.
Yeah.
You've got a couple of sequels, and that to me is where I start to tune out studios, you know. Like I understand that there are some exceptions to the rule, like Toy Story 2, etc., from Pixar, but I really have a hard time with, like, you know, Madagascar 3. Yeah, not seeing that.
Ugh.
You know,
yeah.
I had really high hopes for Kung Fu Panda 2. Did not like it that much. You know, it wasn't awful, but it was certainly not nearly as good as the first one. And I kind of feel like with all the imagination and all the storytelling devices that are available to studios, especially with the, you know, the plethora of artists that they employ, it should not be that difficult to come up with new stuff. It's the problem is that the producers and the money makers, you know, they know that, you know, this certain IP did very well, so that in order to, you know, fund new endeavors, they need to, you know, create Kung Fu Panda 2 so that they can pay for something like, you know, Rise
and
of the Guardians.
And the TV show and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I haven't seen the How to Train Your Dragon TV show. Have you seen it?
I've seen a couple of clips here and there. It's,
yeah. My friend John Sanford directed it, and I haven't seen it yet. So sorry, John. But he spoke very highly of the process. He was very busy, but he seemed to be happy, and he's a picky dude. So I'm kind of curious to see how that turned out. But so it's nice to see that Rise of the Guardians got, you know, is an original take on things. And
yeah, the film opens with Jack Frost becoming Jack Frost, and he has no idea who he is, where he came from, or anything.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, the audience is right there with him. So it was a nice little vehicle. So, you know, the audience is Jack Frost sort of thing, but yeah. It's worth checking out, I think.
It's funny. I didn't even realize, because the last trailer I saw might have been an older one. I didn't realize that Jack Frost was even in it.
Yeah, he's the basic premise is there are, four guardians, and they take care of the basic guard the children: Easter Bunny, Sandman, Tooth Fairy, and Santa Claus, who's called North. He's got these wicked tattoos on his forearm. One says naughty, one says nice. It's pretty sweet. Yeah, and he's always running around with these big swords and stuff. He's pretty badass. And, there's, a threat that emerges, and then the overseer of everything sort of says there's a fifth guardian coming, and it's Jack Frost. So,
oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
See, that is nothing like the trailers lead you to believe.
Yes, like yes. I all I saw was the trailer, and I kind of just disregarded it from that. I was like, another one of those, maybe I'll skip it. And I totally didn't. And now I feel like maybe I should see it.
Yeah, no, it was worth checking out for sure. Yeah, you know, it was like, it's almost as they didn't do as bad a job on marketing that as it did like The Iron Giant with when that first came into theaters. So I remember seeing that, and it was like two people in a theater with me.
Oh my gosh, I love that movie.
So good, right? But yeah, sometimes studios just don't know what to do with the property, and they just drop the ball, and you know, properties die, and 500 people get laid off from DreamWorks, don't they?
Wow, like, really?
Yeah, recently, like 500 people.
Ah, jeez.
So
that's awful.
Yeah, so there's gonna be a lot more little freelance companies and stuff starting up, I assume.
Probably.
Or they're all gonna migrate to the other firms. But now with Disney owning ILM and Pixar. There's probably going to be some changes there too, you know. Like I think there might not be as much cross hiring or something. I don't know. Anyway, we'll see what happens with that as well. But you know, monopolies aren't good. So
no,
I've been recently kind of addicted to Disney Animation's YouTube channel. They've been posting some kind of very technical how-to videos on how they deal with things like cloth simulation and all this. And even though I pretty much don't know 50 at least, it may be 70% of what they're saying, it's still kind of fascinating to me to just watch them figure out these complicated issues and show kind of examples of how they're dealing with it. It's really kind of cool.
Yeah, the way they worked on the Paper Man bit was quite astounding. Yeah,
the
on that, it was crazy.
I loved that one.
Yeah, Paper Man was very cool. Very cool. I've got actually Matt Ducharme from Comics Coast to Coast, my co-host there, sent me a tweet a little while ago with a behind the scenes on Paper Man and how they did it all. And I haven't watched it quite yet, but it's definitely on my YouTube list. I've been watching a lot of YouTube lately, actually. I've been finding a lot of channels that are posting consistently, really good content, usually consumable content, you know, like you said, Eric, you know, 5-10 minutes, like nothing, you know, too sapping from your day. And right. What's funny is that I can sit down and I can watch 3 or 4 of them, and then, you know, 40 minutes is gone. But I find it a nice way to kind of like, oh yeah, no, I'd like to watch that, you know. And you have the kickback interface on the iPad that you can then AirPlay to the TV, and you can kind of just, you know, watch at your leisure. And it's a really good, experience for me so far. What have I been watching? It's like the CGMA Masterworks YouTube channel, Bill Duran's channel, which I mentioned last week on the show. Jocelyn and I like to watch Geek and Sundry from time to time, and there's a couple of other channels too. A lot of video game stuff. We just like you were saying, like behind the scenes on Disney stuff. We've been watching behind the scenes on Carbine Studios. They're doing this new MMO called Wildstar, and they've been posting a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff because they've committed to releasing it this year, so they're starting to put out new behind-the-scenes stuff and new, like, trailers and introduction videos to the classes and the races and stuff. And they seem to have a very good sense of humor about it, so we've been enjoying those and stuff like that, too.
Cool.
It's been really, really fun. And the other movie that I got to this week was a first viewing for me, but it was also on the Apple TV, and that was Skyfall. And
nice.
I just cannot express how convenient it is to spend $6, rent a 1080p 5.1 video, have it downloaded by the time your pizza is done, you know, and then sit back and watch the movie. And if you don't finish it, you can pause it and pick it up anytime in the next 48 hours. It is fantastic. Never had to leave the house, you know, stormy weekend, didn't want to go anywhere. It worked out wonderfully. And to combat what I was mentioning earlier about, Blu-ray and tech issues, there was no tearing. There was no lag. There was, you know, everything was crystal. Everything was crisp. The sound was great. When it was in 5.1, didn't do so well on the headphones. Jocelyn ended up crashing and I finished the movie on my own, and then she finished it the next day. So when I switched to headphones, it was really kind of watery. It wasn't nearly as good. So it wasn't really meant to be mixed in that way or delivered in that way. But I have a 5.1 system, so that stuff was good. But the movie itself, I mean, it was good. It was Bond. You know, it was a lot of fun little smirky bits in it. There was a lot of drama, obviously a lot of action and chase scenes and stuff like that. Really well paced. A lot of, you know, kind of calm conversation and planning versus, you know, chase and action and stuff. I did have one big grievance with it. So, I mean, I'll issue a small spoiler alert here. So if you haven't seen it, then let me know. The villain was not something that I was on board with. I didn't find him threatening in any way. I didn't find him at all smarter than the good guys. Like, there was nothing in it that made me feel like he was going to win. And I also found a lot of the plot holes. Now, I get it that it's Bond. I get it that the villains are supposed to pace and talk, but there was a lot of opportunities where his mission could have been over about halfway through the movie. You know, there was a lot of opportunities where Bond could have killed him and didn't. And you're just like, God, just somebody shoot him. Like, stop missing. Stop talking to him and end him. That to me was a bit of an issue. But, I mean, I understand that that's kind of what Bond is, too. I mean, you're talking about a spy movie. You have to throw it up there with superhero movies. You know, Superman can't, you know, people can't fly in real life either, but everybody accepts that.
Right.
So, have you guys seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, where do you stand on the whole villain argument?
I thought he was quite effective as a villain, probably more effective than most of the villains they've had in the past 20 years of the franchise, because his motivations were actually pretty clear. And, you know, a part of that pacing and stalking and teasing and all that stuff would be him sort of savoring his moment and building momentum to finally extract that revenge that he wanted to get against Q. So I thought it was appropriate for, you know, that particular storyline. Sometimes they do, you know, monologue too much, but, you know, I thought in this case, you know, it fit the surroundings. So
yeah. How about you, Rick?
I agree. I mean, the only thing I had weird issues with is I was a little I thought his plan to hit the bad, what would you call it, his evil plan was it seemed a little cumbersome. Like he was going out of his way to make it a little too complicated. I mean, I know that's kind of a sacrifice that just movies make sometimes to make it an entertaining movie and all that, but part of me was just like, couldn't he have done this a simpler way? Or I don't know, maybe that's just me, but the rest of the movie I loved. And you know, it's really kind of weird, Joel, just the other day, that's the other movie we rented on my PlayStation with Vudu. Yeah, and it was my first viewing, or our first viewing, too. And we were saying, isn't this so much nicer? We used to have to go to the store, and now we can just hit a few buttons, and boop, there you go.
I still have to go to the store, though, you know, because it's, you know, some of these places have been there, you know, at least the smaller joints around here have been here, like, you know, 20, 30 years. And, you know, the notion that they're going to have to shut their doors shortly, like most of the bigger franchises, is kind of sad, I think.
That is sad.
I don't think the corner stores make nearly enough money on their movie rentals that they do on the fact that you're stopping by for popcorn or chips or snacks when you're there.
I'm actually thinking about the there is that one chain, the local chain is still here.
Oh, yes. What's it called? Venus Video? No.
Video Difference?
Video Difference. That's what it is.
It's just the, and it's also something nice, just, you know, walk through a store and pick up the DVDs. It's kind of fun, too, right?
Yeah.
You have a good point. There is something nice about just kind of looking around through the movies and the covers and all that and going, ooh, that looks interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
And then you get home and like, oh, Jennifer Aniston is horrible.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said, too, for the, I guess, overstimulation of downloading movies from Netflix or I should say streaming from Netflix or iTunes. I mean, iTunes is a little clearer in terms of that. You're usually going to iTunes for new releases. Like, you know, this just went out on video last week, so I'm going to go rent Skyfall because it's in my brain space. But with Netflix, I mean, Jocelyn and I have even so much entered into our instant queue that we have deer in headlight syndrome when we go to Netflix. Like, we cannot decide what we want to watch until one of us just kind of has a dose of common sense and says, oh, we should watch the next episode of, you know, X, House of Cards. And then we're just like, oh yeah, we should totally do that. And that's something, that's a show we love, but we forget it's there because there are 600 other options right in front of us. And it's just kind of
always overload.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so there's something to be said, I guess, for the, I guess maybe there needs to be a balance between, you know, going to the store and the plethora of options that are online. Well, the other thing that I did like about Bond, which I had to remind myself, is that these Bond movies with Daniel Craig are prequels to all the other stuff that has existed in the Bond universe. Or they're meant to be sort of prequels. And there's a lot of tie-in with Moneypenny and the new M and all this kind of stuff and how it rolls forward. So, I liked how they tied it all together. It was very slick. You could see how the events of this movie then motivate him to be a little bit more diligent and less of a loose cannon, which is what he was kind of in the first two movies with Daniel Craig. And I did like that aspect of it. The other thing that I pulled away from the movie, which is probably just a personal thing for me, is I felt flabby after watching this Bond, because I don't know how old Daniel Craig is, but I know he's older than us. And that dude is ripped. Now, I understand that it's a movie thing and that the guy's got a personal trainer and all that kind of stuff, but holy crap, he is in good shape. And one of the things I really enjoyed about him as a Bond is that when he's fighting somebody or when he's doing one of these things, he looks like he can do it. You know, Pierce Brosnan running after a subway train and jumping on the back of it as it pulls away from the station does not really strike me as feasible, even though I know it's a Bond movie. But watching Daniel Craig do it, I never for a moment questioned that was possible. You know, I just kind of assumed. Yeah,
me too.
Yeah, he could do that. Sure.
Of course he can. Look at him.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at him go.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, what did you guys think of the Bond girls? Because that's usually a big thing in these movies, and I didn't pull away with like, oh, there's gonna be a Bond girl. Who's the Bond girl? And I didn't find her. Like I didn't feel like it was really an important moment in the movie where it has been in so many other films.
I
didn't even really think about it, honestly. I was like, oh yeah, I guess that would be the girl after kind of near the end of the opening scene where she was with the train and the big what happens with him. I didn't want to spoil it, but and I was like, oh yeah, I guess that's okay. I guess that's her.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a part of the original generation of Bond fans, you know, it's probably something that would be more tied into those guys. It'd be like, you know, for us to be Star Wars with lightsabers and droids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These aren't the Jawas you're looking for. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I agree, Joel, that the way they tied in the whole prequel bits and setting up to the original films was really well done, though, because that's something that I think could so easily been mishandled and just clumsily thrown out there as like a, hey, look, just so you know, this is, you know, part of that. But I think they did it. Whoa, telephone. Sorry.
It's okay.
I thought they handled it just really nicely.
That's MI6 calling to tell Eric to shush.
Sorry, Manny Fanny, I'm busy. Get another agent.
Yeah, too funny. Well, I don't have anything really happening on my reading or listening lists this week, so we can probably just plow right through to our section where we would normally read emails from you, the listener. If you'd like to email the show, you can send us a message to thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. You can also shoot us a message on Twitter, and that is thecitadelcafe on Twitter as well. And we will be more than happy to share your thoughts on anything that we've talked about or anything that you would like us to talk about in the near future. So just drop us a line and we'll insert your message right here. And that brings us into the picks for the show. And that is a section here where we just kind of pull some fun stuff from the internet that we found and share it with you. I've noticed lately that it's been very visual because I've been on this art kick and I keep on picking, you know, artists and people's photos and things to share on the show. So I've tried to balance it out a little bit. So this week I have a Kickstarter campaign, which is called Nico and the Sword of Light. This was brought to my attention by Mr. Scotty Young, and it is a animated comic book project, very similar to a pick that I had a little while ago on the show called Bottom of the Ninth. And this is an original story by the guys at Imaginism Studio, and the as you'll see in the Kickstarter video, the lead guy on it is Bobby Chu with a couple of his friends. And the premise looks pretty cool. It's about the darkness taking over and this little kid Nico that gets a sword of light. And they tease quite a bit about it. They don't really give you a lot of visuals, but not a lot of story, which is good, because I wouldn't want, you know, a lot of the story to be given to me in the Kickstarter video. You know, if I want to back this, then I want to be able to experience it as I go. And it looks good. Some of the animation that they showed was a little flashy, a little on the slidey puppet side. Other things were very well done. And I feel like that's probably going to be par for the course with these moving comic books or animated comic books. They're probably going to be cutting corners where they can and where they should, and then putting the money on the big action shots, the splash pages and stuff like that. Because as Peyton and I know, animation is expensive. And I think to get these apps and books available for people at an affordable price and at an update schedule that is feasible for the creators, they probably have to keep things a little bit on the simple side. Now, I haven't read the whole Kickstarter yet. I got through about half of it. I'm thinking about backing it because it comes with one of the levels is a art book. So you'll get kind of like a concept art book and sketches and stuff like that with a bunch of people from Imaginism, not just the people that are actually heading the project, along with, you know, the digital copy of the book for your iPad, or the digital copy of the animated book, excuse me. The art book is a physical thing, or a PDF if you want. And the only hesitation that I have, and this is why Peyton was chuckling earlier, is because I have backed a project by Bobby Chu before, and it was an audiobook that he had written about art and concept art and how, you know, like some of the, it was kind of like a, not a how-to, but like a an art book, an inspirational book about how to, you know, get yourself out there and become a better artist and stuff like that. And for the lack of getting into a rant, the book was just basically a lot of common sense packaged with, you know, kind of Imaginism and his name and stuff like that, as far as I was concerned. Not that there weren't some valuable tips in it, but it just wasn't for me. So I have this really weird hesitation, having been bitten before. I don't know if I want to drop the $30 or $40, you know, to get something like an art book. I could do something as little as $10 to get the PDF. But I don't know if I want to go that route. Have you guys seen the project at all? Have you heard about it before?
Just from your link there?
Not yet.
No. Okay. Well, I don't need to hang on it now. Maybe we can chat about it another time, but have you ever had that experience where you've purchased something and been jaded by the purchase, and then the same company or the same producer then comes out with something new and you're attracted to it, but then your muscle memory is just like, well, the last time didn't really work out so well?
Oh, sure. That, yeah, you know, that happens with all kinds of things. It's, and then you're like, ooh, do I trust you again?
Yeah. Is this going to be the newest iPad, or are you putting a new one out next week?
Well, yeah. Yeah, there's always that. Yeah. There's always that. I haven't quite yet decided, but I have seen several artists that I respect and talk to online both retweet it, share it, and back it. So I'm curious to see how it goes. I mean, I have about a month, I think. I think it's the 21st or the 23rd or something of March where it ends. So there's lots of time for me to decide whether I'm going to back it or not. But I thought I would at least share with you guys and let you know that it's out there. And the other thing is a very simple, and I don't think it's a Kickstarter. I think it's actually something that exists, or at least it's a concept video for an iPad stand. And it's called the Finger Gripping Phone Holders. And it's a very small, very simple design for an iPhone stand. And I thought it was brilliant because one of the issues that I have with all these like holders and accessories and stuff for the phone is that they tend to give you like one or two options. They're good for one thing, but they're not good for another. And what this is a set of rings that affix themselves to the back of your phone they rotate. So you slide the two rings onto your fingers like a ring, and that allows you to hold your phone without actually gripping it. Then you can also turn your phone to be horizontal or vertical in your hand, which could be fun for gaming, but it could also just be for like how I like to use my phone is usually horizontal. On top of that, you know, I mean, at this point in the video, I was like, oh, cool, that's neat. You know, maybe I'll get that for my mom or something. Then they showed that the rings operate as a stand as well in various different positions for your phone, including angle adjustment for putting your phone on a desk and angling it for different things, which I do a lot as well when I'm using a timer or, you know, looking up a recipe or something like that. Sometimes the phone is easier to have in the kitchen than the iPad. And what was ingenious about it is that the rings will rotate at a hinge on the base of where they attach to the phone, but they'll also twist. And it's the twisting of the rings that allows the phone to be put at just about any angle that you want. So you put the rings at a 45, but then as they twist in tandem, they give you 48, 9, 52, 75. Like, it depends on where you want to put the phone. And I thought it was a very, very elegant design. So I thought I would throw it in here as one of my picks because it was something that I had not seen in quite a while. And it was something that I just... I don't know, it caught me off guard this morning. I was kind of expecting, oh, just another iPhone accessory, and I got something completely different.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. So, Peyton, anything for picks to share this week?
Yeah, just two quick little picks. Both aren't related. Saw this the other day. There's a guy who, what is his name? Actually, I don't think he has a name. I think he's probably posted as being anonymous. His Tumblr site is called Replace Face. And what he's done is he has found these old portraits from an English portrait artist who painted 329 portraits of Russian generals during the invasion of Napoleon's invasion of Russia. Anyway, it's a big blurb there on his website. All these pictures are now in the public domain. So he's taken them and he's photoshopping paintings of celebrity faces over it. And he's offering these up as like canvas prints or whatever, and with the full frame and everything else. So you have this big poster size painting of Bill Murray as a general. It's really quite funny. And anyway, so you know, and then I think there's also Society 6 sells them on the website for iPhone cases and stuff like that too. But anyway, just you know, good little giggle through it today. And if you want a little warm fuzzy as well to go along with the giggle, there's a guy who's doing putting Calvin and Hobbes comics, and I'm not sure if he's editing or redrawing them, but putting them in real-life background, so like Calvin and Hobbes on Mars with the Mars rover, and, you know, running through the forest, stuff like that. I mean, it's a really, really cute idea for an actual webcomic if someone, you know, wanted to use real-world backgrounds that are, you know, very well photographed with nice comics and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, I would encourage someone to do their own artwork.
Yeah, no, I would encourage I think this guy is, you know, it's an homage to...
yes, no, I agree. I think
I don't think he's trying to get any sort of money off it.
No,
right?
I think he's just doing it for fun. Kind of a proof of concept.
Yeah, but sure. it really does look nice, so...
Yeah, no, it does look nice. These are fantastic. I love the snowman one.
Yeah.
Those are awesome.
There you go, Eric. There's a new project for you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Comic photographer.
Ooh. That could be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Eric, do you have anything that you've noticed online the last week or so that you wanted to share?
Oh, I was totally unprepared and I didn't think of anything. I just didn't even think I forgot you guys did the internet pick thing.
That's okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record the show live every Wednesday night at 7:30 Eastern. Nope, that's a lie. It's a new time. It's 8 Eastern on starcrossedonline.com/live. Music for the Citadel Cafe was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and the podcast is, of course, available on demand on iTunes and via our website, thecitadelcafe.com. To contact the show, as I mentioned earlier, you can send us an email or Twitter to thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or respected social networks. One of the best ways for the show to reach new listeners is reviews in the iTunes store. If you have not done so, do so now. If you have not done so, we will not judge you, but please do so now. We will feature your review right here on the show. Don't forget to join the Gamers Inn on Friday nights on amove.tv. Not this week, but next week, Ryan and Jocelyn are going to be talking to our friend Bill Duran and his company Punish Props about video game prop making and the whole prop making industry. He's been doing some super cool stuff on his YouTube page, and I am really looking forward to that interview. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my name is Joel Duggan. You can find my comic and pretty much all that I am up to on starcrossedonline.com, and you can also purchase my book, Starcrossed Volume 1, available in my store. You can follow me on Twitter and Google Plus with just my name, Joel Duggan. Peyton, where can people find you online?
Website is cardboardtrios.com. I actually just recently updated the animation page. There's a couple more samples there of some stuff. And another couple weeks, there'll be a big announcement coming on that. So, and you'll also see that on my Twitter, which is Peyton Francis and all that fun stuff. How about you, Eric? Where can the good folks find you and all your fun doings on the interweb?
Well, like I had said way earlier in the beginning of the show, the podcast website is MrMomDaily.com, and then the rest of my stuff can be, there's links to everything else from my website, which is Frumpus, FRUMPO.US, and then my Twitter is just Snyder Mahler.
Fantastic. Well, Eric, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Absolute pleasure to have you on. You're welcome back anytime.
Wonderful.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. And if I'm not incorrect here, Eric, you're from Utah, are you not?
I certainly am. I'm from downtown Salt Lake City, about 20 minutes away from Scott Johnson.
Wow, that's awesome. I can't believe we didn't meet you at Nerdtacular last year.
I actually saw you guys, and I was going to come say hi, but then it was, you know, a million people. You remember.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people, but you still should have said hello.
I know, I should
have. Well, now we have no excuse.